A reader lives a thousand lives before he dies. The man who never reads lives only one. Come into the reading room, all you lovers of language and literature. This is the place for those of us who believe that reading is essential as we seek to rise above the ordinary. And the reading room contains a host of extraordinary people, leading lights of the written word. Authors, literary critics, columnists, and ideas people will tantalize your minds with their wordplay while discussing the ideas and worldviews that form our wonderful literary milieu. Come step into a world of magic, the place of undiscovered treasures, a room of reading. And a very warm welcome into the very warm reading room. Now, when it comes to reading, of course, there are lots of people who belong to book clubs. I always thought that book clubs should have been something like in that it was the Jane Austen one where everybody got together and discussed books. Then I found out that book clubs on the whole, if you're doing an in-life one, are about people getting together, having dinner, talking nonsense, and exchanging books while they drink wine. Which I found very depressing because I was like really reared up and going like, right, going to talk to people about books that really kind of get to me, like, you know, An Eternal Golden Braid or Still Life with Woodpecker, those kind of things. Only to find out that, you know, by the time you'd had enough wine, you'd have to get an Uber home and that would be that. So it was always a thing that I wanted to get together with people who are book people. And now we have somebody who's written about them. Somebody who started a book club online called the Good Book Appreciation Society. And that's going from strength to strength. It's a place where people can ask for good books, can talk about good books, and can talk about Marmite books, which we are also going to talk about because some people don't understand the whole Marmite thing. So to talk to us about these things, we've got Paige Nick. And how many books is this now that you've written?
Well, this is number 10.
Okay, so you're running this thing. What do you do? Let's just go back to the very beginning. Paige Nick. What do you do for an actual living?
Well, I'm a writer.
Yes.
So I write all sorts of different things. My day job is an advertising copywriter. I'm a freelance, high concept advertising copywriter. I've got a business partner, Karen. She's the art director. We work as a team and we go from agency to agency in South Africa and around the world and solve problems for them. Okay. And that's my day. That's kind of my, I want to say 9 to 5, but there's nothing 9 to 5 about it. That's my day job.
Yeah.
Then on the side of that, I used to have a column in the Sunday Times. So I write a column every now and then. I run the Good Book Appreciation Society and I write books on the side. Oh, I'm also have a book show on Fine Music Radio called Book Choice every second Tuesday from 12 to 1 p.m.
You see, this is the thing. People who work in the creative field generally don't find them having only one thing that they do. We have lots of different things that we do, whether it's all related to what you do in your 9 to 5 or side hustles. So when do you get time to actually write books then?
Well, I'm not married by choice and I don't have children by choice. I missed the day at school when they were handing out that feeling that you had where you wanted to do that. I only ever wanted to work and write and travel. So I think you make time. The time is elastic. You know, if your deadline is tomorrow at 12 on something, you'll be finished tomorrow at 11:30. If the same deadline for the same project is today at 5, you'll finish today at 5. So time is a little bit elastic. And we work with what we've got.
That's indeed true. But I mean, writing a book is completely different to having a deadline where you have to write an article, which is, what, 1,000, 2,000 words. So how do you manage to actually get yourself into the mood for sitting down and just writing something where there isn't a deadline specifically?
Right. Well, I find that everything that I do feeds into everything that I do. So my partner has said to me a few times, there's too much, you need to take something out of what you're doing. And I can't. Everything feeds into everything. Mm. So for me, the answer to your question in truth is when I decide to write a book, if I have an idea for a book and I decide that I'm actually going to write it, I become obsessed with getting it out. And I don't do very much else. So I'll do my day job, I'll do the imperative things that I need to do in between, and then I'll grab every side minute around that and write pretty obsessively. And I write 7 days a week, even if I only get 150 words down, if I have a big work day, advertising work, and I don't have a lot of time, I'll make sure I get 150 words down minimum because I need that momentum. I don't stop. So I'll steal time everywhere. I don't go out. I can't read. I don't watch anything. I basically have a lot of voices in my head once I get into the middle of writing a book, and I feel like my job is just to get them down. I have to listen very carefully and get them down. You know, it's like a dream. If you have a dream, you don't write it down as soon as you remember it. It's gone. A lot of that is the way it works for me. I have snatches of dialogue happening all the time, and I need to get it down. So it's this obsessive process, and I love it when I'm in it. The people around me don't like it so much. I call myself page no friends because I just don't want to. It's what I want to do. It's not what I have to do. It's the thing that I choose to do. It's what I want to do the most. I wake up thinking about it, go to sleep thinking about it.
So do the voices just suddenly pop into your head one day, or they're there all along and they suddenly coalesce?
No, you wait for them. So I have the idea for a book and start thinking about who my characters are. Who's Harry? What does he sleep in? What does he reach for in the fridge when he's standing in front of the fridge?
How does he like his eggs done?
How does he like his eggs? What are his relationships? What is he scared of? I start to think about these people. Norma, who is she? Where does she live? What kind of underwear does she wear? And you just build, I build these people, and every writer does it differently. This is the way I do it. I build these people in my head, and then they start having conversations. So two best friends, you know, Norma and her best friend Marina, will be having a conversation in my head while I'm running. And my job is just to make sure I get that down. Or, you know, Harry will be having a conversation with his wife, or a little plot, you know, so they start to chat. And I know I'm really in the book once they start chatting, because there's a vast portion where they're not talking yet, and they're not having conversations yet.
So these characters that you have in your head at the moment, the ones you're talking about, do any of them overlap in any of the books, or the books also completely different and the scenario is completely different, that there would never be an overlap?
Books are completely different. And once I'm done with a book, then I'm already thinking about the next book, and I'm starting to build the next characters, and I can put that last book in a box. And then often, I mean, I wrote this book, People, in 2023. Before I go into this big promotional phase, I actually have to go back. What are their names again? You know, who was what? What was the story? What, you know, I have to do, give myself, I don't go back and read it. I've read it enough. I'm moving on to the next one. So they don't cross-pollinate.
Okay, so what was the first book that you wrote, and how long ago was it?
So that was 2010. I had always wanted to write a book. It's called A Million Miles from Normal. And it's about an advertising copywriter who loses her job in South Africa.
So are you the person in the book, or is it just loosely based on
you? Loosely based on me, because she loses her job in a horrific fashion and nobody will hire her again. And she leaves and she goes to live in New York and tries to find a job in New York, and she struggles horribly. So that was my first novel, 2010.
But you also did books that are not specifically novels.
There was a book of columns and the responses. Yes. So I had a column in the Sunday Times for 4 years, which I absolutely loved.
I loved it too.
I really enjoyed that.
It was one of the reasons I bought the Sunday Times.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, that's such a lovely thing to hear. I loved that. It was high pressure. You have to deliver your copy every week. And I was writing about sex and dating. I was single at the time. I was in my 20s. And we were all watching Sex and the City. And I was writing about sex and dating. And I used to get a lot of letters from the column. People would write to me to either berate me or ask me questions or agree with me. And so we brought out a book of columns and the letters. So we published a column and then all the letters that followed that column. And that was called Pens Behaving Badly. So that was not a novel. Then I've written two kind of spoof comedies. Death by Carbs, which was when everyone was banting. Remember when banting was all the craze? So I murdered Tim Noakes on the first page.
Yeah.
And then there were so many suspects that they didn't know who to question first. And I also wrote a spoof about Jacob Zuma when he was president. I wanted to kick him in the head. I was so angry with him. And I didn't know what to do with my anger. And so I wrote a novel where I abused him in as funny way as I could. And tried to kick him in the head to make myself feel better.
I think a lot of people would have agreed with you on that one. But anyway, let's leave that to the side. Now, book people, just reading the blurb that comes with it initially, immediately, because it's about a group, a book club online. Once again, saying, is it loosely based on you and your experiences, or is it just a diving off point?
Right. So I started the Good Book Appreciation Society in 2013. We were in a book club at the office that I worked in, and we were five of us. Every Friday, very informal. Every Friday we would gather at somebody's desk, sometimes there was cake, and we would shove books in each other's hands and have a furious debate about all these different books. And shortly after that, one or two people left the agency. We also got very busy. Culturally, something changed and people stopped taking lunch, and advertising lunch was a thing. And then slowly money got smaller. Lunch was no longer a thing and we stopped being able to have the book club. And so we decided to just move to Facebook so that the people who left could still join in and we could carry on. And my friend Megan, who was in the club, called it the Good Book Appreciation Society. And the first page, the first post got 3 likes. We were 5 people in the group. And as things do on social media, it escalated. So today there are 23,000 members of this club. And we're on Facebook and we just talk about books. So they say the oldest writing advice in the world is that you should write what you know. And so I was kind of had this thought, oh, it would be kind of fun to write a book about a book club on Facebook called the Good Book Appreciation Society. So life mimics art, right? So so it's the club itself is the leaping off point, and I basically escalated what happens in the club to make fiction.
Okay, well, let's go into the real book club online. Okay, can anybody just join us if they like books?
Yes, if you like books, I mean, even if you don't like books, you can join and say that you don't like books. I mean, come prepared for an argument. But yeah, anyone can join. It's a private group. I made it a private group back in 2013 because I have advertising people in my timeline and book people, and I didn't want to annoy the advertising people with constant book chat. So I made the group private, which means you have to ask to join. And on Facebook, if you make a group unprivate, you can't go back to private. So I've always just kept it private because it's a nice insular space where people can feel safe, safe space most of the time, where people can feel safe to talk about books as long as they want. And so, yes, anyone can join, but you have to ask to join.
Okay, so in the book club, you mentioned fighting. Are there lots of arguing people on the book club? I mean, are people saying, oh, you're talking absolute nonsense, that was a brilliant book, and we'll get into Marmite books in a moment. But generally, are people quite like, we want to share our joy of this book, or do people get quite snarky?
People feel very passionate. This is social media after all.
Yeah. I mean, that's not the best place in the world.
Right. No. People feel very passionate about how they feel about certain things. The books they absolutely love, they feel very passionate about if you're a book person. The books you absolutely hate, you feel very passionate about. And then there are side issues. People who and things that are very triggering. Trump, Musk, Palestinian-Israeli conflict, Russian-Ukrainian conflict, Jordan Peterson. And these are people who appear in books. And they're issues. Middle Eastern conflict are issues that appear in all sorts of books. And so often there are conversations about these people, these books, and these issues. And that will really inflame people.
Yeah.
And people on social media are very quick to outrage. And something I've noticed, and I don't know if it's just me, but I've noticed that in the real world, we've started to become very quick to outrage too. I haven't seen it so much in Joburg now, but in Cape Town, there's a lot of hooting in traffic that I didn't notice before. And I wonder if
But Cape Town does have the worst drivers in the country.
Well,
let's be honest about it. Okay. No, they've been voted as
not
the worst
great.
Drivers.
But coming here, I actually realize it's not the case necessarily here. But I noticed that our outrage is spilling over a little bit.
In Cape Town? I thought everybody was so chilled down there.
We have our good days, not bad days. But so, yeah. So on the page are lots of 80% of really lovely conversations. I love this book. Oh, I loved it too. It changed my life. I haven't read it. I'm going to read it. Oh, I didn't really love it. And that's the extent of it. Or interesting stories. My grandmother passed this book down to my mother, who passed this book down to me. And I only found it on my 40th birthday. And she meant for me to have it on my 6th birthday. So beautiful stories and beautiful community. And then there's the 20%, whether it's a love-hate book, I loved it, what's wrong with you, I hated it, or a person. How can you, why are we reading books about Musk, he's a madman? Well, we should be reading to find out more about these people. So there are conversations, and I'm not having an opinion here, I'm just telling you there are different sides to this, and people feel very, very passionate about it. Have you heard of Godwin's Law?
Yeah.
So there's this Godwin's Law where the longer an argument goes on social media, the sooner somebody will mention Hitler or the Nazis.
Yeah.
And as soon as I see somebody mention that, or Trump or Musk.
Do you block and delete?
No, it has to happen. These are conversations. I am quite strict with abuse don't come and abuse, you know, if people are abusing each other badly, I'll step in. But actually, these are book people, and you need to be able to have an intelligent conversation and, you know, discuss these things with each other. So I try not to block and delete.
So how much of this has actually spilled over into book people, into the book itself?
Well, the story behind the book is that it's about this book club, and it's run by a woman named Norma. She's 42 and she lives in London. And on the club is an author. His name is Harry. He's a crime writer. And he obviously really likes his work. He's very passionate about his own work, and he's passionate about promoting his own work. And so he comes on the page and spends a lot of time. He creates multiple personalities on social media and promotes his own work.
Mm.
A woman takes up his challenge to read his book, reads it and hates it, and writes a scathing review of the book, at which Harry falls apart. And he does that thing that authors aren't supposed to do. You're not supposed to respond to a negative review of your book. It's just authoring 101.
Mm.
And if you do, you're called a badly behaved author. There's a term for it. And the internet can turn on you very quickly. People can turn on you. They can go from really liking you to hating your guts and wanting you to die and ruining your career. So that's what happens to Harry. He has a complete meltdown, and he goes back, he retaliates with a response.
Mm.
Nobody takes kindly to it. Everybody moves on to X to say, look what this guy did. And from X, they move on to Goodreads, give all his books that he has and hasn't even written yet 1 star. He gets cancelled, and because he carries on responding, he can't help himself. He gets cancelled. All his events get cancelled. His life falls apart, and a crime is committed, and the police have to step in. A member of the club is injured. And so it's this breakdown of community and breakdown of society and cancel culture as we know it.
That kind of is a lot of what is actually going on. I mean, you know, the Richard Osman series, Thursday Murder Club. Which is now going to, is a series or is it a movie that they brought
everything.
Out?
Everything. It will be everything. Books, okay, t-shirts, so yeah. Series,
and
then, movies,
and I love
on
them.
Moon.
And I absolutely love the books. Okay, and everybody's now going, yeah, but what have they got Pierce Brosnan coming in there? He shouldn't be being there. And what? And I do like the idea of Helen Mirren as the main character. And I mean, I'm dying to watch it because I've loved the book so much.
Yes.
But it's also some, you know, have those people who have got their noses in the air and say, oh, gosh, well, how on earth could you read that stuff? You know? But it's fun. It's, I mean, and what you're talking about here kind of, for me, is the same vibe in a way that it's a community of people and how, as communities do, fall down sometimes.
Right.
Especially, do you blame it mainly on social media these days? I mean, this whole JK Rowling thing with her being cancelled.
Yes.
I mean, it's actually quite unnecessary. Authors should say what they want to say in their books and not say it in real life.
Well, that's the view.
Is what people say.
That's the view. Rightly or wrongly, that's the view.
Yeah.
People love to climb into a fray.
Mm.
So this that you're talking about, you know, who's going to play which character. Like I said before, I can see how you feel passionately about this. We feel passionately about the things that we love and the things that we hate.
Mm.
The other one is Sally Andrews' wonderful recipes for love and murder.
Yes.
And they turned it into a series. I think it was set in, Scotland? Or Ireland. I can't remember either.
Yeah.
But so much conversation. Half, why did they set it? It's South African. Why did they set it in Scotland? And the other half, oh, it was wonderful set in Scotland. And we climb in because...
Why is yours not set in South Africa?
Well, there you go. So a couple of reasons. The one is that Norma, who runs the club, absolutely can't be me.
Mm.
I needed her to not be me. I needed to separate her as far away from me as possible so that I could write fiction.
Mm.
Because so much of the book is based on actual real life. In fact, there are chapters that are verbatim from the club. I asked the members for permission to print it in the book. So I set her as an accountant in London. I don't know my times tables. Maths is so far beyond me. I can't get past 12. I wanted to really separate her from me. So I'm also in a phase for some reason. I've written 2 more manuscripts since this. All 3 are set in London.
Mm.
I'm having some kind of feeling that I want to write in England right now. I do spend a bit of time there. So that's why it's not set in South Africa. I needed to separate. And in fact, one of the publishers, when I approached publishers to be published there, said it was a deal breaker for them that it needed to be set in South Africa. Would I rewrite it? And I thought about it really hard because they were my publisher for a really long time and we have a partnership. I couldn't. London is intricately wound into the novel. I would have to unpick a lot of it. The publishing house wouldn't have worked in South Africa. So much of it wouldn't have worked in South Africa.
So do you think that the fact that it's not set in South Africa will actually be beneficial for overseas sales?
It's not. I didn't manage to sell it overseas. I came close. I got some really lovely 15 really lovely rejection letters. And maybe if we sell enough. Yeah. Actually, the main problem that the UK publishing industry, my agent in London put it out, because I have published internationally before, and I got these lovely emails back from the publishers to say they absolutely loved it, but they couldn't figure out what genre it was.
Mm.
It's not crime, but it's got crime in it.
Mm.
It's comedy. It's not chick lit at all. There's no romance. They couldn't find a genre for it. And one of the rejections said, this novel sits on two bar stools, which I thought was quite interesting. So they need to put it in a box and put it on a shelf and say, it's crime, it's fantasy, it's romanticy, it's whatever it is, literary fiction. And they couldn't do that. So that was one of the reasons. But maybe, I don't know.
But then what would they classify Thursday Murder Club as? Because that's none of them specifically either.
Is that not crime?
Well, I suppose loosely, but it's also about interconnectedness of older people.
Cozy crime, leaning towards cozy crime. It's crime. It's also Richard Osman. He could write a shopping list and they would publish it as a series.
Yes, he's amazing.
You can't compete. That is a big thing.
But why do they want to put everything into a box? Surely they can sit there and say, this is something that breaks the mold. It's actually thinking outside the box. For goodness sake, we have a non-box book.
Well, publishers are... It's a difficult, difficult industry.
Mm.
If you think in South Africa, mainstream fiction, a bestseller is selling 600 odd copies of a book.
Mm.
It's a really tough industry. And so in my experience, and this is completely my experience, over the years, marketing and sales have become more involved in the subbing process, in the process of deciding what to publish.
Mm.
Big teams of marketers, big teams of sales. In the old days, it was an editor. And, you know, the publisher would find a book that spoke to them and publish it. But in the enormous global publishing houses, imagine how many submissions they're getting in. They need processes. I'm not saying I feel like I'm fence-sitting this whole thing. I'm not saying it's right or wrong.
Mm.
It's not great for an author, but you have to jump through a lot of burning hoops to be published in 2025.
Much easier to write a book about gardening.
Much easier, and will probably sell incredibly well, as you've experienced as well.
But, I mean, that's because it's also that kind of thing is very specific to somebody who's interested in that. It's not a novel. So novels are, you know, either love or hate. I mean, I can read everything.
Right.
Chick lit, I mean, because if you go through university and you have to write lots and lots of kind of like essays and dissecting books and this, that, and the other, that eventually you just want to read for fun.
Yes.
You just want to read schlock.
Yes.
And that's the, you know, the proper, the Jeffrey Deavers and the Lee Childs, just for that kind of like
comfort.
Getting your brain into a different space.
Right. What a joy.
Do people still read like that though? Because we were saying just before we started talking here that during COVID, we all thought, right, and I mean, that is 5 years ago already.
Oh.
We're going to sit down, we're going to read that pile of books we have next to our bed. And how many of us actually did? We didn't. We slothed on the couch watching, binge watching series instead of reading. And
some of us have
never gotten back into it.
We were incredibly stressed.
Yeah.
Under our cool, calm exteriors. We were incredibly stressed. My belief on it is that we lost focus. I couldn't read until somebody sent me an Ann Tyler novella by Ann Tyler called The Redhead at the Side of the Room. And I had picked up a dozen books and not being able to read anything. And I read this and that got me back into reading right at the end of the big lockdowns.
Mm.
So yes, people, look, nonfiction historically does sell traditionally better than fiction. It just does. There's special interest. There's a lot of reasons for that. There's a male and female skew, whereas fiction, a lot of it, there's some female skew. That being said, people are reading more than ever. Look at BookTok. What BookTok has done to the younger generation. I'm not sure if your girls are readers, but BookTok is an explosion of reading.
Unfortunately, my children are crocheters, so they listen to books.
Oh, nothing unfortunate about that. But listening to books is reading books. It's the same.
And especially if you think about it from time immemorial, that in those days, there weren't books. So the way of getting the knowledge were people speaking the book.
Verbal storytelling.
So going back to podcasts and listening to online books, or what do you call them?
Audiobooks.
Audiobooks, that thing, yes. Listening to those is actually kind of going back to how it was before the invention of the printing press.
Right, and that's another interesting debate that we have on the Good Book Appreciation Society. People like to have these kinds of debates. Is listening to an audiobook still reading? Yes, I feel personally wholeheartedly that if you're taking in a story and you're being transported to another world, you are reading. You are reading a book. You have essentially absorbed this book. There are many people on the page who would now get into an argument and say that's not reading. And then, you know, Kindle, do you read Kindle? Do you read books? You know, reading is reading.
Yeah.
Storytelling is storytelling. And look at the growth of podcasts. It's astonishing. It's unprecedented universally of where... I mean, I can't even think when podcasts first started, but it's a relatively short history to have exploded as it has. We want to hear stories. We want to hear what's going on, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. So I do think people are reading a lot. You asked me also, we were chatting before this, and you asked me if there are lots of book clubs. Are book clubs still a thing? Book clubs are huge in South Africa. And that's where my research lives, is in South Africa. But I've been chatting to book clubs who've been together for 30 plus years. One book club has been meeting once a month for 30 plus years.
But are those the book clubs where they get together to skinner and have dinner and drink wine? Or are they actual book clubs like my initial idea of what a book club should be?
I don't see the difference.
There is a difference in the one. They don't talk about books at all. They just share books.
Well, it's a book club. So every book club has a different process. Some book clubs, everyone has to buy and read the same book. They read it in a month and they discuss one book. In our book club, in the agency that started The Good Book, we were reading old books, new books. You read a book, I read a book. Some people didn't read a book. We're shoving it in each other's hands and talking about it. In other book clubs, it has to be, you don't all have to read the same book, but they have to be current books. So a million different, you know, a million different ways to skin a book club, but they are out there and people are... really enjoy them and are very involved, and it's their community. You know, a lot of these women are raising children. They don't have time to themselves, and I think it's a 2 hours reprise, which is what a book does anyway.
Yes.
Is gets you out of your world and gives you a reprise from the madness of the universe to go to another place, even if it's into a garden to read a gardening book, or, you know, into outer space with Orbital by Samantha Harvey that just won the Booker. It takes you somewhere else. So even the book club itself is an escape.
Yeah.
Whether you're talking about books or just drinking, using it as an excuse to drink wine.
Yeah.
My friend called it Wine Club. They had Book Club and they soon changed the name to Wine Club.
Yeah, that's what
they were honest.
All the book clubs that I joined here in Johannesburg were pretty much that. And I was kind of like, you know, having come out of doing degrees in English, et cetera, and really being into writing and into authors and all of that. I was sitting there saying, but these people know nothing about literature.
But that exists. You'll find a book club that is a very staunch, high concept, high literature book club, and you will love that because you can go and talk about the classics or talk about whatever you want to talk about.
There's a place that I want to go and visit in Linden somewhere where you can go there and have a hot chocolate or a glass of wine and read your book in quiet with everybody else, which I think is quite a nice thing. I just want to go and sit somewhere and just read my book.
That's in Cape Town. They've got the Silent Book Club. Have you heard of that? I don't know if you have it in Joburg as well.
Not that I could quite happily be out there, but I don't know.
They have. It's huge. You cannot believe. Again, in 2 years, I think it's been going for 2 years. It's on Instagram. They have amassed over 100,000 followers, and they have these gatherings. You go for 2 hours. The first hour is spent reading quietly. They did one on Bree Street. They closed the street in summer and everyone sat in cushions on the floor and read. They do them in restaurants on the beach, Kirsten Bosch Gardens. They do them everywhere. First hour is spent reading quietly. Second hour is networking.
Oh, okay.
And it's hugely, hugely successful. I get a bit scared that I won't be able to keep quiet. In that hour, when you're supposed to just be reading quietly, I don't know that I'll be able to keep quiet.
And when I start reading, I kind of like, everybody says, oh, yeah, you should just like read for relaxation. I don't, because I pick up the book and then I've got to finish it.
Are you a one shot?
Yeah, unless I'm very tired, then it'll be like, okay, just one more chapter. Yeah. Okay, just so then sometimes I'll say, okay, only one more chapter. It'll be one of those, what's his name? Patterson. I'll get a Patterson.
James Patterson. This
is because his chapters are so short.
So
you can say, okay, I'm only going to read, but then you want to read the next one. So that's problematic.
You know what's interesting? In advertising, my lives, they collide a lot, but we did some work on Netflix, the brand Netflix. We made some ads for them. And you know how a brand will say their biggest competitor is, say, DSTV. So for Netflix, maybe their biggest competitor is DSTV, or their biggest competitor is Apple TV. But Netflix, as a global brand, they say their biggest competitor is sleep.
Yeah.
And this their aim, that's why when it comes to next episode, you know that little bar that you see, you come to the end of an episode and it says next episode.
You have to quickly sit.
And you told yourself that was going to be the last one and you were going to go to bed because you've got work tomorrow. And you see it coming, you're like, oh, they left me on such a cliffhanger, I have to watch the next one. They've succeeded. And books are very much the same thing. The big enemy is sleep or having to cook a meal. Or And I so love the reviews on the Good Book Appreciation Society when people say, my children went without, I ordered pizza for dinner because I wanted to carry on reading. I couldn't stop reading to make dinner. Or, you know, I was late for work, or I only went to bed at 3 o'clock this morning because I had to finish this book. So those are the books that you can get really excited about because you know that's that crack, that reading crack that you can't stop.
I think also you're talking about children have to have pizza. My children would be very happy if I was reading and they got pizza. But they're aware of which books are the books that they should read. And in fact, they've stolen some of mine and put them into their room, but I don't think they've actually read them.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so they are very aware that, okay, surprisingly, they quite like all the Gonzo journalists.
Oh,
so they've
nice.
Got those in their rooms because that was like, I go through phases. I want to read all the Gonzo journalists. Then I want to read like all of the cyberpunk stuff.
Nice. You know?
So I'll go through these various phases of reading everything in a genre that I can get my hands on.
Yes.
But the kids, I think they're so turned into watching things rather. And in fact, they'll sit and they'll listen to a show rather than watching it. They need to have that noise, and they'll have subtitles on in an English thing.
So
they
do
read
that.
It. Do you? Why?
Because I can't always hear what they're saying, and sometimes I want to multitask and then I can read what's going on at the same time.
Okay.
But you know what's interesting to me? When we were kids in school, we didn't have the internet, right?
Yeah, we used to have libraries.
Yes, but in school, there were a handful of books that we all pushed on each other. I don't know if you remember, The Clan of the Cave Bear.
Yes.
Flowers in the Attic.
Yes.
Sophie's Choice. Somehow we just knew that these may be older sisters, who knows, that these were the books we were handing, reading late at night, learning about sex, learning about relationships, learning, we didn't have the internet, learning about the world.
Yeah.
And we pushed these books on each other. What's really interesting to me now with BookTok is that these same books
are being
reissued
yep.
and really loved and enjoyed by young people who are the same age that we were when we read the same things.
Yes.
So it's so interesting.
It's coming of age
books. It's universal.
Yeah.
It's this universal need to know stuff. And even though they've got the internet, it's all still coming back, you know. And now also, of course, with the Colleen Hoovers and the Sally Rooneys and all these. But the reissuing of these old books is fascinating to me.
I found that a lot of the people I know who are kind of around about my age, a little bit younger, what the Gen X, because I'm not a boomer or Gen X.
Okay.
I'm actually a Jones. You have to keep up with us. That's from 55 to 65.
Oh.
We're Joneses. Okay.
Oh, are you Joneses?
We're Joneses. Keep up with us. Keep up with
it. Try to keep up.
So I've noticed a lot of women are going back into the latest iteration of the Mills and Boone novels.
Yes, that's so interesting.
That's how so many people, and I'm like sitting and remembering I was 14 and reading Mills and Boone, okay, because our mothers were reading Mills and Boone at that stage.
Yes.
But now there's this once again, I'm like, are you seriously reading that now at this age?
Yes, that's so interesting. You know, there's a whole new genre, and again, I attribute it to BookTok, which is just a remarkable phenomenon that we will need to research and research and research. But have you heard of this romanticy?
Well, you mentioned it, yes.
So romanticy is romance and fantasy.
Mm.
And you know, like 5-10 years ago, if you went into a bookstore and you wanted to find the Mills and Boone, the romance, it would be a little bit in the back of the store and a little bit of a dark
section.
That's
kind of like we don't read those
right,
things.
Either on a high shelf or a low shelf, and you got it. Today, and same for fantasy. Fantasy wasn't mainstream.
Mm.
If you were a little bit different, you enjoyed world building and fantasy. Today, you walk into any bookshop, you know, the mainstream exclusives.
And it's Wordsworth, up front and center.
There are just rails, shelves right up front of romanticy, and they are selling like hotcakes. And you know what else interests me, and this is very generational, is that in our day you buy a book, then you would buy the second one. If you absolutely loved it, you'd buy the second one in the series. If you enjoyed that, you might buy the third one in the series and on. The kids today who binge watch TV shows, we used to have to wait a week for the A-Team, for MacGyver, for Dynasty, for the next episode. These guys binge watch whole series, and we all do. they are buying an entire series of books without having read it. They go into a bookshop and buy 3 to 5 of these thick romantic-y books and take them home with them, not even knowing that they're going to love it. It's a complete behavioral change.
It's weird. Hey?
It's based on how, I believe, based on how we consume content today.
Mm.
We consume it differently to how...
If it's more than 2 minutes, it's too much. I think that's where the problem comes with reading as well. You have to give more than 2 minutes of your attention to one thing.
That's true. And that ping of serotonin and of the phone pulls you out of it.
Mm.
I find these days when I want to read all the time, I love reading and I really enjoy it, I have to be ready to read. Do you have this? I have to be ready to read. Get my social media done, check my messages, clear that all. It takes a while. It's not quick. And then you don't anymore just pick up a book to read. You clear your deck first so that you're not interrupted.
So everything's done
and
you've got all that time. You can lie on the bed in the lovely puddle of winter sunlight in the afternoon.
What a dream.
And have your book.
Yeah, what a dream.
What books have you got on your bedside table at the moment?
So, strange thing. I picked up this is a crazy story. I picked up a secondhand book on Sunday. I was in Cork Bay. I went for a tidal pool swim because, like, hey, I'm very Cape Townian.
This cold water swimming thing that you guys do.
But right there, there's a guy's name's Ruan, and he has a little table outside the bakery, and he hand selects secondhand books, and his taste is just incredible. I don't know, he's born to do what he does, and you cannot walk past his table and not find something that you're deeply interested in. And I always say I'm not going to buy a book, and I always end up buying a book. And a book caught my eye and I grabbed it. It's called Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, and I thought it was a novel. It's not. It's nonfiction, and it's a therapist who goes for therapy. So it's all about her experience. She breaks up. She's in a breakup and she needs to go for therapy. So it's all about the process of a breakup, the process of therapy and the mind and all that kind of thing. And something called to me and I picked it up, and somehow it's the exact book that I needed in this moment for this trip to Joburg, for my life right now and what I'm going through. Somehow this book leapt into my hands.
Mm.
And here's the even more amazing thing. I'm reading it. And I get to a page that I'm going to keep this book forever, a page that I'm very drawn to and that I want to mark. And I go, I'm to dog ear the page, and the person who's had it before me has dog eared 2 pages in the whole novel.
I read that you did that last night on
both
social media.
Pages that I wanted to remember and note had already been dog eared.
Yeah.
The only 2 pages in the book that had been dog eared, and I resonated. So that's a book that's very much jumped into my hands and is very much something that I want to read. I also have just finished Khaki Fever by Lindsay Norman.
So. Oh, I'm going to be speaking to her soon because my one daughter's a field guide. So she's reading the book at the moment, and we're going to talk to her from the young field guide female point of view as well.
Oh, you will love that because you really love animals as well.
Yeah.
If you're an animal lover, this book is for you. The young woman, she's a game guide. It's a game farm.
Yes.
But she has a personality where, you know how you're supposed to be very polite to the guests on a game drive? She can't help herself.
She has to say what she feels.
She's very snappy to the American tourist who asks stupid questions.
Apparently the French are the worst.
She's very snappy and she loses her job because she's...
Yeah.
So it's about her life as a game guide.
No, that's why I thought I have to talk to her about it because my daughter will... She's already going, wow.
You'll love it.
And so we're reading it together, which is nice.
Rescues a dog and rescues a baboon, and it's just... It's a lovely, light, easy read. So Khaki Fever, and then I'm also about to start the new Miranda July, which has been nominated for all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Long-listed for all sorts of things. It's called All Fours, also comedy.
It's difficult to keep the books from towering over, especially if you have cats that keep on jumping onto the table and knocking them off, which is a pain.
No, it's impossible to keep up and not buy books and just keep going and feel horribly pressured that your to-read pile is never ending and how will you ever get to it? But that's the joy, right? Maybe the next book that we're addicts.
Yeah.
Maybe the next book is the one that changes my life forever.
I've had lots of books of those.
Right.
And do you also have the thing that there's lots of books that you read and then you're quite happy to pass on to somebody who's got like a little library outside their house where, you know, take a book, leave a book, whatever, or to a secondhand bookshop or to friends, and then you have the books that you cannot get rid of.
Absolutely.
There are certain books. Yours are in my South Africa. I have a whole South African section.
Amazing.
Your books are still in there.
Oh, that's nice. Thank
you. So, I mean, I'm very kind of specific, and I can sit there and look at the covers of all the books on my bookshelves and remember each of those stories. And for me, that is part of actually enjoying a book. And somebody says, but if you've read the book and you're not going to read it again, why do you keep it?
No, I'm the same as you.
Got to, because I can look at that book. I can have an entire evening of reading in my head by just looking at my bookshelves.
I'm the same as you. And you know, my bookshelves are a mess. I don't, some people color code, some people, do you, I don't know if you have.
And I just genre code.
You genre code. I have no system whatsoever, but I know where absolutely every single book is.
Likewise.
I also have a South African shelf, so all my South African stuff is on one shelf, all my favorite. And then I have a favorite authors, couple favorite author shelves. The rest is just a hodgepodge, but I can zero in on any of them. I know where they are.
Yeah.
So it's
exactly.
It's some sense memory.
They're friends.
They are
They're
friends.
The people who
they
have given
friends.
You a part of your life and have to
they
stay with
friends.
You.
Yes. I also have this very bad habit. One of my very favorite authors, his name is, actually it's a very good habit. Why did I say it was a bad habit? His name is Jim Kress, and I really, really just think he's incredible. I will buy as many copies secondhand of his book wherever I can find them so that when people come and visit, I can push copies on without saying, you have to give it back. Without the pressure of
give
it back.
I did the same thing with Still Life with Woodpecker.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh,
everybody
like
who was everybody who was important to me got a copy of that book.
So you don't loan out your very favorite version of it that you have so many memories in a tea stand from when you spilled your tea on a train or whatever.
Yeah.
In fact, I just bought Even Cowgirls Get the Blues from Ruan at Cork Bay outside there. I bought the last one that I bought the week before when I was like, hey, shoo, our tidal pool swimming, was Even Cowgirls Get the Blues, just because I saw it there and I thought, oh, Tom Robbins, what a loss.
Yeah,
what an incredible
writer.
And I wanted to go back to that feeling I had when I was young and I first read it.
Yes. It takes you back.
It takes you back. It lit my mind on fire, made me think things. Will I still think things? Will I think different things? That's the experience, the reading, the what it does to you, where it takes you.
Absolutely. I would never get rid of them. So where can people find book people? I know you're up here doing your in conversation with at various places.
Yes.
Sorry, it's one of my least favorite phrases.
Oh, what, like, in conversation with?
Oh, yeah, it drives me nuts.
Why?
I'm in conversation with. No, you're not talking to somebody. It's like saying my house is number 42 on second. You know, that also drives me
just
crazy.
Just number 42.
Just number 42, yeah.
Well, you can find it at all bookstores right now. It's so hot right now because it's just come out. So I get a couple of months where I'll be front and center. I'm the News 24 book of the month. It's the first time they've chosen a fiction title. Normally, historically, they've always chosen a nonfiction title.
Okay.
So that was exciting.
That's very good. Well done.
Thank you.
Cool.
And exclusive books, you'll see me in all the bookstores as you go in. And also online, exclusive books online.
Mm.
Take a lot.
Goodreads.
I don't think you can buy
Goodreads.
Buy
from there, no.
Yeah.
What's the one that, what's the online bookstores? There's so many of them these days.
Yeah, wherever online. Yeah. And you can, the book lounge, and some people, Bargain Books do a good discount.
Mm.
They've discounted it nicely. I think it's down to 330 from 360 Reader's Warehouse. You'll find it. Ask for them. And if they don't have it, ask them to order it. And you can probably have it overnight or thereabouts.
And when's the next book coming out?
Oh, my word.
I won't put you under pressure. Don't worry. You don't have to tell me, because I know that if you say to people, oh, I'm writing another book, they're all going to say when.
Yeah, when.
How many words are you writing a day? Yeah. You know, how many words are you up to at the moment? No, that's far too much pressure. We won't put you under that.
Thank you.
Paige, thank you so much for chatting. I'm so happy to actually meet you in the flesh. I know we have spoken before.
Yes.
And I wish you all the best with this book. And please let us know when you have the next one coming up.
I've loved talking to you. It's much better than a conversation.
It is. Thank you for that. Okay, so don't forget, get out there, get a copy of Paige and Nick's book, people, at any good bookstore online. And of course, if you want to find out more about what people think about books in real life, get along to the Good Book Appreciation Society, both on Facebook and on Instagram. We will speak to you again in the reading room, and not have a conversation with you, but you can just listen in whenever you feel like it. As we say, you know, it's just as good as reading a book to listen to what it's about. Thank you very much, and bye-bye.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.